In the morning, I can definitely turn around and have less stress and probably better pay.
Mm.
But it's the enjoyment factor. And I'm in this, like, our business, obviously, we're here to make money. But I don't really mind if we never make millions, you know? But we want to do, well, I do anyway, really good work that makes a difference, that is something proud and fun and there for the journey and is going to make an impact.
Hello and welcome to episode 31 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment is a weekly business podcast where I sit down and chat with some of Ireland's best entrepreneurs to discover their story. This week is a really different and special episode in the fact that I think it's going to be a massive benefit to aspiring entrepreneurs, not only in the way the story is told, but also in the very, very, very practical nature of the interview. This week, I sat down and chatted with Sean Toomey from Team Human. Team Human are a product design consultancy. And what that means is that if you have an idea for a product, they'll help you take it from idea stage right up until actual product stage. So they'll talk you through how to make an MVP, how to make, you know, a product that you can get a design done from, and how to take it right up until protecting it with a patent. Basically like a Willy Wonka workshop for product ideas. It was such an interesting chat. I learned a huge amount. I got Sean to break down exactly what's involved in coming up with a product idea right up until actually releasing it as a product. So we stepped through the entire process. On top of that, Sean and his business partner, Rob McKenna, are in the early stages of their own business journey with Team Human. So we spoke about Sean's background with Dyson, which is incredibly interesting, how he ended up working there and the things he learned there. He also shared design thinking. So how do you think with the mind of a designer? So how do you start with a very rough idea, hone it, shape it, mold it into something that's actually tangible, and then bring it right through the process? So not only is Sean's story very interesting, how he shares his practical tips was super, super interesting. So I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode. Again, I would grab a notebook, I'd grab a coffee, sit down somewhere quiet, and just be willing to take some notes on this one, because I think there's a huge amount of insight that Sean was very kindly shared. So here we go. Episode 31 with Sean Toomey from Team Human. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
So give us a little introduction if you don't mind.
Yeah, so my name is Sean Toomey. Myself and my business partner, Rob McKenna, have a company called Team Human, and we do product development. So we do product design, we do research and development, and basically help people bring new technologies to the market.
It's probably the best, I said on Instagram the way over here, it's probably the best company name of anyone I've interviewed so far. start there. Where did that come from?
Yeah, so company names are tough. We got to a stage where we had to bite the bullet and pick one, but Team Human kind of formed around, it's almost a mantra of the name. So the idea of human, it's good to be reminded of it, especially in the product world, because first of all, you need to think, well, the thing that you're making, who are you making it for? Who are the humans that are going to use it? Because you don't want to be making any old crap that's just going to get thrown in the bin and it's more waste. So you got to focus on the human there. Then when you're actually developing the product, you want to think about how the human is going to interact with it. Is it for a child? Is it for an old person or a young person, small, big? And you need to think about the different cultures. So constantly thinking about the human throughout. And then also we have kind of an ethical point on it, and to think about humans at the end of a product life cycle. So when you finish a product, how is it going to be recycled? Can it be recycled? All that kind of thing. Also, the human who's manufacturing it. You got to think about the person on the assembly line. You don't want to use horrible, nasty chemicals. And then at the end of the day, we're coming up with products. So they need to be products that enhance a human's experience. So we're all about humans. And kind of our name is to be, remember that constantly. And we're a team, so Team Human.
That is a great summary.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Serious. That's probably the most thought I think anyone's told me about their company name. That's very cool. So how did you guys start off?
Yeah. So, I mean, myself and Rob both studied product design and we did it in DIT, which it's a brilliant college, really, really practical, hands-on. And when we both finished, we went different paths in terms of job-wise. So I went over to the UK. I started working for Dyson on the new product ideas team there. Unbelievably great company to work for. Like, especially in the new categories team, constantly developing new concepts, prototypes. It's the dream job for a product designer, if I'm honest.
Mm. How did you end up getting that, actually?
So I got very lucky in a few ways. So with my my thesis project went very well. So we did this kind of design thinking process, and I came up with this product idea that was basically a walkie-talkie phone case, and it's a VHF version. So what was basically happening is I interviewed the RNLI, and they were saying a really big problem they had is loads of sailors are going out to sea and kayakers with just their mobile phone. Mm. And if you do that, you're not guaranteed signal.
Okay.
Also, if you make a call, only the person on the other end of the line can hear it, not all the other boats. Mm. And also, you can't trace a phone without a warrant. So they say you have to take a VHF radio.
Okay.
So I did my design thinking research, and I saw, well, people are buying fancy waterproof phone cases, and they're spending some 60, 70 quid on an OtterBox. What if I could build in the technology into a phone case in that they could use their phone then as a VHF radio?
That's cool.
Thanks.
Yeah. I live in a boat and I could do one of those.
Yeah. So that was kind of the premise. And then I presented it, that was my thesis, and I presented it to Hothouse and DIT, who are brilliant. They took 10% and they helped file for a patent, and then they showcased it around. And within the sailing community, it went kind of a bit viral.
Okay.
So it was in loads of magazines, over Twitter, in lots of kind of blogs and stuff. And from that, then we started getting calls from like distributors asking when would it be on the market.
Nice.
And I mean, the kind of when I knew I wanted to definitely get into the entrepreneurial side of things was at one stage I was out in the car park at work, and I was on a conference call between some engineers in Tokyo, a translator, and some business development people in California. I was still working in Extravision at that time.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I was kind of like, this, you know.
This is what I want to
do. I like this kind of thing. Yeah. So, I ended up, thankfully, with a very nice project, so that when I just applied online to Dyson, flew over, presented that, and thankfully, because there was a lot of kind of gravity behind the project because of that, they gave me a chance. And unbelievable place to work. It really is, like, it's the product design playground. It's brilliant.
I was reading an article about them in the Sunday Times about a month ago about their new university.
Mm.
Like, the whole place just sounds like fictional.
Yeah.
Sounds like someone just dreamt it up in like a little mini Iron Man world. Like,
yeah.
So what's it like?
So design thinking, just to give you a bit of a background on it, is kind of pioneered by IDEO. But people have been doing it for years and years. And a really simple way to explain what it is, or a couple of examples even, is the lifts in the early 1800s. So in New York, there were the lifts in these giant skyscrapers. But they're all still kind of working off these steam engines and stuff, and they couldn't go any faster or any higher. Or sorry, they could go higher, but they couldn't go faster. And loads of the landlords were complaining, saying, all our tenants, they're in there, they're taking 5 minutes to get to the top of the building, we're getting loads of complaints. So the engineers kind of pushed the technology to the max that they could, and without calling it design thinking, they did a design thinking piece on it, and they researched, well, what is the problem? And the problem was the people were bored. So they put mirrors in the lifts, and all the complaints stopped. So taking on that principle of design thinking, another one would be IDEO then, who really pioneered it, went.
Yeah.
And they are a brilliant design consultancy over in the States, and GE spent billions developing a brand new MRI machine. But the thing with the MRI machine, really loud, it's this massive magnet.
Mm.
And kids were going into it and terrified of
it's
the noise.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Oh. I volunteered to do, there was a girl doing brain research a few years ago, and she needed volunteers. And I was like, that sounds like a new experience. I hated it.
Yeah, I could imagine.
It was
horrible. Yeah, thankfully I've never had to do one.
Mm.
But it was extremely loud, and all these kids, which was really sad as well, really high sedation rates.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, the last thing you want, especially if you're sick, is to be sedated unnecessarily. So IDEO, again, did a design thinking piece. GE got them in, and they said, well, we can't improve the technology. So they said, well, what's the problem? And the problem is not that the machine's really loud. The problem is the kids are scared.
Mm.
So what they did is they covered the MRI machines and stickers like pirate ships and alien ships and all this kind of thing, and kids loved it and no longer had to be sedated. So that's what design thinking is. It's about...
It's so simple. Just mirrors and stickers, like...
Cost absolutely nothing, and then easy solution. So design thinking is a process of research, rapid prototyping, coming up with solutions and coming up with technologies that are going to interact with humans and that are kind of needed. So Dyson really lives and breathes that. So when I went in there, I was on the new product ideas team, you would be given, say, a problem, or you might even be in charge of researching what a problem could be. So they might say they want to get into, we'll just stick with vacuum cleaners for now. They might have said, we want to come up with a new vacuum cleaner. So we'd read, well, what are the problems consumers are currently having? We'd buy loads of competitor ones, we'd see what we hate about it, and we'd actually make a list of tangible things that are terrible about it, and then that's what you're trying to solve. But then in there, it's a playground, so... Well, you know, it's work, but
it sounds like fun. Yeah,
you're drawing ideas at your desk, and you might be drawing them on CAD, but then and sending them off to 3D printers. But then equally, you're getting up and you're actually getting on the mills and the lathes, and you're turning down steel, and you're building these prototypes and these rigs. And nothing is more satisfying than when you press the button and it turns on and it works. You know, that's the moment every engineer I think wants.
Okay.
So it's just that, and it's an iterative process, and it's a really healthy place to work. Everyone's really supportive. You know, there's that thing of if you're in a meeting, you don't want to be the smartest person there. And I can definitely say I wasn't when I was there.
Like, starting your career there must have been just an education on top of an education. Like, it's just 100%. It's been mind-blowing.
I call it, like, the master's that I did. You know, it was unbelievably... And the people in there are unbelievably generous with their time and patience. And I learned an unbelievable amount of skills in there.
So what kind of things did you work on, if you can say, like, or even just rough ideas of what stuff you would work on?
So I can't really say.
Cut to end of interview.
Yeah.
So what, how would your process would be idea thinking? So you'd have a problem and you'd be like, go solve it.
Exactly. So they might identify an area that they want to get into. So say they're in hair care at the moment. Mm. So when I was there, they were working on that area and it hadn't been released to the market. But they might say, this is an area we want to get into. We're a big company. Let's take a look at how we can make a difference there. So they would interview, say, hairstylists. They'd go around to different kind of barbers or salons to see kind of what problems are there. They'd buy all the products. Actually, the lab there looked like it was something run by a serial killer. There was hair hanging from the ceilings everywhere and stuff. So, and you know, you'd be in there, you'd be testing it. And what we used to say is you become an expert in it. So whatever you're working on, you'll become an expert on that product. You'll know it inside out. You'll know what's good about it, what's bad about it, how it works.
Mm.
So that's what you do. And then you kind of realize what's bad about it, and you try to... It's rethinking the wheel a little bit, but where it's needed.
Phenomenal. And then how long were you there for?
So I did about 2 years there.
Mm.
And then basically what happened was the VHF radio... project from college was kind of taking off a bit more. The publicity was really taking off. So I decided to come back to Ireland and give it a go. So it was kind of my first... Well, yeah. I've always wanted to do something entrepreneurial. Yeah, kind of one of those people. Had my first business when I was 16.
What was it?
That was... do you remember Oxygen, the festival?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so...
I'm old enough. It's okay. Sadly.
So everyone was paying 25 quid, I remember, for a ticket to lug all their stuff into town and get the bus to Oxygen.
Okay.
And everyone in my school was going, so I thought, you know, I could definitely rent a bus for cheaper.
Nice. So then entrepreneur.
Yeah. So then, you know, I think I was like 16, 17. I was making like $2,000 for the summer for just organizing a bus.
Nice.
And everyone was getting a cheaper bus fare as well.
Yeah,
so,
everyone wins.
Yeah, exactly. So... That was my first little foray into business.
Not fast.
Yeah.
Simple.
So I've always wanted to do something to do with business. Mm. And then the product design and engineering is kind of, you know, it's a passion. So when I had the opportunity to work on my own product and kind of have a go of a business, because Hot House had filed for a patent, I came back to Ireland, started working on it, got a little bit of funding in, did the New Frontiers course, phase one and two with Enterprise Ireland. So again... Brilliant learning experience. I think the way I went into it is as a sponge. Like, I was like, I didn't think it would probably make it to market. I hoped it did, but I said, at the very least, I'm going to treat this like a sponge. I'm going to absorb everything I can. So going on the course, you know, I was taking notes every day. Anything to do with the IP, I was meeting with the IP attorneys in town. I was just learning that process, dealing with, say, the Innovation Vouchers, Enterprise Ireland, dealing with the colleges, developing the technology.
That can be a wieldy process. That can be quite a complex. A friend of mine is literally going through that at the minute. And it's baffling at the start.
The IP process?
The whole thing, the whole process from his product and how does he have to protect it. So what's involved in a patent? Because I know a lot of people who listen to this are like either in the process or want to go through a process like that. So what's involved?
Yeah, so it's the first of all, there's many ways to protect a product. So depending on what your product is, if it's not really a new technology or doesn't do something different, you can still protect it with a thing called design rights, which is quite cheap. Okay. And that's the equivalent to kind of like getting a trademark or something. But it means people can still make a product similar to yours, but it'll look different. But if you want to do an actual patent, it's a long process and it's an expensive process. Mm. So straight away, you're probably talking about €2,500 just to get your patent written up.
Wow.
And then you also can file it with a patent office and they'll do a preliminary search. So for that €2,500, you'll find out, is your idea novel and inventive? And you'll also kind of get your patent written up.
Okay.
But that is your first step. And then you go down the longer process, which you are starting to file in different jurisdictions. And that's where your big money comes in. I mean, all in all for a patent, because you can pick just to file in Ireland or just the UK or in many jurisdictions, you can spend as little as probably 20 to 25, but then you can spend a lot more than that as well.
To a startup, that's the world.
Oh,
€2,500 to a startup is the world.
It's a huge amount of money. But you can also be really clever with your patents. So depending on what you want to do and also your investment, if you have that €2,500, if you have patent pending, and then you can go to an investor and say, I have a product and I might own all the IP for it,
Okay. You're
much more likely to get an investment.
Okay. And all those Dragon Den pitches suddenly make a lot of sense then.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the flip side of it as well. You hear of people who file for a patent, they spend the €2,500, and there's a couple of people interested in it, but they'll wait till the last minute to offer the investment because they know they can squeeze them. The patent will run out unless they give them the money.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a tricky game.
So when you say, oh, you can just file it in Ireland, what does that mean then? Are you only protected here? So someone could rob your ID and do it in the UK or...?
Yeah, exactly. So everything is filed through the World Patent Organization. Well, there's a European Patent Office, UK, all these different ones. Mm. So like a patent attorney will write it up for you here in Ireland and then you file it in, say, the UK and they will search through the global patent searches.
Okay.
But it's a bit of a tricky process because, like, for instance, I've worked on stuff that we have done a basic UK patent search. Nothing came up. And then we progressed the project to a further stage, and that's where the world patent came in. And then suddenly stuff crept up in Japan from like the 1980s. Wow. And like it can go back quite far.
Does a patent last forever?
No. And then you can also top up a patent as well. There's a whole world of it.
This is the kind of nerdy stuff I really like.
Yeah.
this is the interview's just for me.
And then there's like, there's a story of a patent attorney was telling me of, I think it was a comma was in the wrong place and made their patent worthless.
Really?
Like every single word counts in a patent because everything is how you can work around a patent.
Right.
If you say, you know, you have a mug that holds up to 500 liters and it does X, Y, Z, well, someone might be able to make a mug that goes to 400. You know, it's you've got to be really careful with how people can work around yours and is what you're patenting worth the money? Is it actually protecting something or is it just to say you have a patent? And the physical product world is there's a lot to know. Like it's a daunting process to be honest. Going right the way from your idea to actually making it into a physical good to manufacturing it to the IP to the marketing, like there's a lot involved with physical products.
So when you went to file yours, what was happening when you went through the New Frontiers 1 and 2? What happened there?
So, we were kicking the ball fairly well down the road and we got a product circuit board made and we had designed it. And we were really happy with it. It looked great. A lot of interest from people. But unfortunately with the patent, because we had filed it in the early days and then I went to Dyson, the patent basically had pretty much elapsed for me to file it. So then it was in the public domain, so then you can't really refile a patent or anything like that. Oh. Once something's in the public domain, it's out there. So we did our patent search, and then I think it was 2 years. All of these stats that I'm giving you on patents need to be double-checked. Mm.
They're rough ideas. Okay.
Yeah, they're all estimates. So we filed it, and then I think 2 years went past, and then you can either pay kind of the big money and start going in jurisdictions, or there's a couple of PCT routes and stuff you can go. But we didn't do that. And because we didn't and we missed that deadline, well, then it's out there in the open and you can't patent it again.
What does that mean, though? If you had the original idea, if you just put it out there, then it's kind of fair game.
Yeah, so like very intentionally, my product was not in our final year exhibition in college.
Okay.
Because if it was in the final year exhibition, it would have been out there in the public domain.
Wow.
It would have been in the brochure and everything.
Yeah.
And it could have tripped me up down the line.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so if you have an idea and you really care about it, people say to post it to yourself and all this kind of thing, and sure, you can, because actually in a court case, you can open up something like that and say, well, look, this exists. But
So if you have an idea.
But it doesn't really mean much.
It's right.
You're getting into like a...
So people say, oh, write a letter. This is my idea. Post it on a certain day. Leave it sealed.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But I mean, who's to say you're not opening and closing that letter, you know? But like, there is due diligence when you are developing something. Like, say, in Dyson, what we do there and what we do here at Team Human is all our notebooks, we sign and date the top of every page and they're stored in records.
Wow.
Yeah. If the last place you want to be is defending a patent, it's really expensive. But it's important to have good records of everything.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So you sign the top of every page every day, date it.
Yeah. And then a good practice as well is on the cover of every notebook, it's, you know, notebook one, date you started it, who owns it, and you go right the way through every single notebook.
That's very cool.
Yeah. It's also then a bit rewarding at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You can be like, I've hammered through 40 notebooks of...
That's class. Yeah. I love that. I'm always like scribbling rubbish into my notebooks. Yeah, yeah. So I can... Now I'm going to start getting right technical with them. That's very cool. So you'll follow along chronologically in each notebook and you'll keep a record.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, it's preparing for the worst. You probably never will need them again, but who knows?
Always got to prepare for that worst case scenario.
Exactly.
So the patent elapsed. What happened then?
So the patent elapsed and to some degree then that didn't make it very appealing for an investor. Like, developing a hardware product is a very expensive process.
Mm.
And especially without a patent, it can be quite hard to get investment with. So because of that, going down the investment route wasn't really a runner. So I kind of went back and started doing a bit more kind of freelance. So I've been working with a few different startups, kind of helping them develop technology. And then because I had the background from Enterprise Ireland with the New Frontiers, I kind of knew kind of the business landscape, patent stuff. And then I had all the technical skills from Dyson. So I started working, doing a lot of freelance. And things were looking fairly good for a few years. But really what the hot space is at the moment in Ireland is kind of in medical devices. So I went off then and did a master's in medical device design.
Okay.
And then at the tail end of that, I started looking around for a job. And actually what happened was a couple of freelance jobs came in. And I also got offered then a job in a medical device company. And it was a pretty well-paying job. Like, medical devices is good. But I'd been doing some freelance stuff with my business partner. And it was actually my dad. I said it to him. I said, you know, there's a pretty good paying job here. And, you know, I wouldn't mind getting a house and a mortgage and going the safe route. Or, like, I'm working with this brilliant guy, Rob. We're getting a good bit of interest from companies and stuff. And my dad said, oh, absolutely, turn the job down.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's very unusual for a dad to say that.
Yeah, well, my whole family have a bit of an entrepreneurial streak. Pretty much all self-employed. My dad has a company and stuff. So
this is something I'm so interested in because we've done your episode 31. And we've done so many now that there's traits and certain characteristics coming through in so many entrepreneurs. And one of them is definitely family entrepreneurial traits.
Mm.
Either as a side hustle or mom was entrepreneurial or dad was entrepreneurial. So it's interesting because people just... like you're talking about earlier, been a sponge. He'd obviously sponged up all that from him. What was he doing?
So he did like, he had his own business that did management consultancy. So he'd go into particularly factories and he'd go in and do this lean process. So if they were making something, he'd figure out how they could make it in a much more economical way.
Okay.
But then he also came up with the software behind that that he could sell in. So he had a small software business as well.
Nice.
And yeah, I guess it definitely has rubbed off on the whole family. Like one of my brothers as well, he's been self-employed for years. He's a creative director. He's brilliant. Another one's kind of a musician. He's gone down that route. And then even myself, in terms of the family links, I'm kind of what molds someone. So one of my brothers is like a real heavy engineer.
Okay.
Brilliant guy. And then another one's creative director, design, all that kind of thing. So and my role's really...
You're the mashup of both.
The Venn diagram, yeah.
That's cool. It's great to have someone that gives you a positive influence like that. Mm. Usually parents can be kind of... I've talked to a few entrepreneurs who hadn't entrepreneurial parents. They were like, you're mad. All that education, UCD, come on.
Yeah, for sure. And I like... In the morning, I could definitely turn around and have less stress and probably better pay.
Mm.
But it's the enjoyment factor. And I'm in this, like, our business, obviously, we're here to make money. But I don't really mind if we never make millions, you know?
Okay.
But we want to do, I do anyway, really good work that makes a difference, that is something proud and fun and it's there for the journey and is going to make an impact.
That's very cool. But I think you know as well, having such a skilled background, you could probably know in the morning that there'd be 10 offers for someone like yourself as well. With the medtech background, with the Dyson background, you probably have that. It's nice to the skill you can always look back on and go, well, I can do this.
Maybe. I don't know, you know?
Okay. So yeah. What happened? You and Rob were working a bit of freelance stuff together and then...
Yeah, and like, because it was a limited company that I was running when I had the phone case thing. And
okay.
God, from doing like the bits of the accounts and the freelance roles and stuff, and the headache of that. And, you know, sometimes you might be in your office on your own until like 10 at night trying to work out something. And then teamed up with Rob and really complementary skill sets. And he's a great engineer and designer. And there was one night we were doing a project together and I think it was probably about midnight. And the two of us were literally lying on the ground in the workshop looking under this. It's a vacuum thing we're designing. And scratching our heads there. And I knew if I was on my own, I'd be close to tears.
Yeah.
But because it was the two of us, we were in stitches and it was actually good fun. And yeah. I was like, this is brilliant. And like, it literally halves the amount of work having a business partner.
Mm.
And from practical things, even taking out the bins, doing it alternative weeks, you know, you literally half the amount of work.
Yeah. I'm a solo entrepreneur, so I can identify with that. But I was talking to last week's guest, Michal from Clean Cut Meals, and he was saying the exact same thing about his business partner. He's like, it's just the yin to your yang. You have someone when you're up, you know, they can be down, you can be up, they can be down. He's like, it just balances.
Oh,
just gives you that, especially in tough times, whereby you just have that constant.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because both of us have days that we're like, what are we doing?
But sometimes, I know myself, I'll often literally be having full-blown conversations with myself in the car, going, am I crazy? Am I thinking, is this crazy or is this genius?
Yeah, like,
which side of the margin are we on today? You kind of go in and you might sketch it out and be like, yeah, that's awful.
They'll
come back the next day and I'll be like, what was I thinking yesterday? You know, so I can imagine it's great to have someone to bounce off. So what was the conversation? Was there a conversation with you and Rob where you're like, right, let's make a crack at this, or did it just evolve?
Yeah, so... Because Rob knew I had this job offer and we'd been doing the freelance stuff together and we kind of were discussing and we're saying, you know, we're having a right go at it together. It's going well. We're getting client offers in and we know we work well together. So we were actually, we had a meeting up north and we were driving down and in the van, what we actually had printed off were a bunch of questions that we decided we'd ask each other on the different journeys going up and down. So it was
such designers.
Yeah.
Most people were like 2FM or Today FM. I'm sure it's maybe a podcast, but yeah, okay.
So we had things like, you know, what would you like to get out of a company? What would be your goals? What would be your day to day? What would be your ideal? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? And
you interviewed each other.
It's pretty much, and we decided we'd see: do we have the same goals? Do we have the same passions? All this kind of thing, and we already knew we were a bit yin and yang in terms of, you know, Rob's definitely a more disciplined character than I, and I can be a bit chaotic. So we knew that was a good match to begin with, and then we both have good practical skills. So anyway, we went through this and we said, you know, this is a good match. This will work well. So yeah, then in January we decided we'd actually formally start the company. So yeah, went through the process then.
Was Rob working on other things at the time? Had he a full-time job, or was he...
He was similar as well, so he was freelance. Okay. And so that was also nice because I kind of had a few clients that I could bring and he had a few. So it was nice having a little bit of a base at the beginning of starting the company.
Okay, so it just kind of evolved naturally then. Just the demand started to come and...
Yeah, definitely. And then since then, like, it's been nice thinking practically about the business, how we want to present it, because it can seem like we're offering a lot of services, because product development is a very dense topic. Everything from like electronics development, PCB, your product circuit board, to design for manufacturing assembly. Like I could literally keep going on, and there's so much research that needs to go in, be it from market research, your product research, your tech, and then actually pushing it forward and developing it and your business strategy alongside it. So we need to see how to package and present ourselves. So it's been really nice to do that and grow the business in areas that we kind of see will kind of be most appealing for companies. Also, what we're kind of trying to do is build a hub in Ireland that is merging engineering and design. We essentially want to build a Dyson in Ireland that offers services to people. So one thing we slightly noticed, like when I'm working with a startup, if we want to get something, say, laser cut or 3D printed, there's places I can send it to, but they're charging like 50 or 100 quid or 150 for stuff that I'm like, I know this is a couple of cents worth of material and 2 seconds on their machine.
Okay.
So instead, what we're doing is in the process of building a really serious workshop where if a client comes to us and wants to make something, we'll do brilliant design service, and then we can do a really good prototyping service for them that's really quick and kind of pass on the savings that way. So we're very, very startup friendly and kind of individual. Obviously, you need some budget, but we have a nice, strong background that we can deliver, essentially.
I was kind of surprised when we were chatting earlier and you were running through what's involved. I assumed, I looked behind us and there's about 8 or 9 desks, and I assumed that was your full team, but like, it seems like there's a massive amount of work. You've kind of preempted my next question. So how do... You know, you have an idea and someone comes to you with that. So how do you bring that then along? So what's the next step? So loads of like aspiring entrepreneurs listen to the podcast, and what is your kind of like roadmap for them? What should they be doing coming to you? What should they be coming with, and how should they then look to develop that?
Yeah, great. So, I mean, the first thing we'd say to people, and like kind of in a very honest way, is would take a look at kind of their background. And if they have a background in, say, I don't know, tennis or something, and they have a tennis idea, okay, brilliant. They know about the product, they know about the industry. But we'd always kind of say, have you done a bit of market validation? Do you know it exists? Most people would say yes before we even ask the question. But if they haven't, we want people to make sure before they delve into this, because it's a long and expensive process, they know there's a market need and want for it. So that's kind of the first step. And they can
How do you
that.
Advise people to do that? Because I think that's actually the step that a lot of people fall down on, is that they have an idea and they do a quick Google, can't find it on the first page.
Yeah.
And assume it's not there. It's not on Google.
So there's a couple of different ways you can do it. And like, there's micro and macro ways of doing it. So if you're a big company, you know, you can do massive focus groups and you can spend a fortune with these marketing consultancies and stuff. But if you're an individual and you've got a tight budget or your startup, start off really simply. Go around, talk to people, go into shops that are selling your kind of product, talk to the manager, see what sells, talk to users of those kind of products. I mean, when I was doing my VHF one, I talked to the RNLI, they're experts in it, but then also to talk to users, I stood outside the marina with the clipboard and talked to sailors coming in and out and said, is this the kind of thing you'd buy or you'd use or you'd be interested in?
I think that's class. I just want to stop on that for a second. I think that's class, because I think so many people just sit down at their laptop, Google it, look online, and then that's it. It's such a gulf between talking to someone, digging into someone who really needs this, rather than just doing digital research.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the going and talking to someone, it's all about insights. Because you might talk to someone out there in the marina and we'll say for this product idea, and they say, oh, that's good because I also have this problem. And you think, I never thought of that.
Yeah,
and then
suddenly,
you add a feature or it's a different product or something like that. And often what can, like, as valuable as people saying, yes, it's a good idea, is people saying, no, that's a terrible idea. And you've saved yourself a lot of time and a lot of hassle.
I think that's why a lot of people don't do it.
Yeah.
No one wants to go. I think there's a comfort in, like, not hearing no.
Just this idea.
Oh, I have an idea. Okay, great. And it just stays an idea. But they have that comfort of not knowing that it's a bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that should push people to actually jump off and pursue the idea is a couple of things. One is definitely if they really believe in it, but the other is wanting probably the excitement and the journey of doing it. Because if you're up for the excitement and the journey, start with this step, start showing it to people, talking to people, don't publish it online because of IP, but start showing it around, get some feedback. And again, if your idea is told no, it's a terrible idea, you might gain other insights about what people actually do want. In fact, I did an entrepreneurial course years and years ago. It's this EU one called the Da Vinci program or something.
Okay.
Anyway, you get sent off for a month to these different places and it's really good.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, and it's for young people, so it's like a...
Is it still going?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You might send it to me and we'll link it in the show notes as
well. Yeah, brilliant. And you get a little stipend on it. And I went, and the biggest insight, and I still remember to this day, was we were in a client meeting and we were doing a branding package for them. And at the end of the meeting, someone came up to me and they said, like, I was good at keeping people focused and on topic, but with a client meeting, that's not important. Let people digress and take these tangents. Like, obviously it's important having a focused meeting within a company, but with clients, if you let them kind of go off on a tangent, you'll find these insights or these things that make them tick or that excites them.
Interesting.
And that's where the golden nuggets are.
Okay. Something they might have been afraid to say up front, but just eventually get to it.
Yeah, or they, like, say for this particular one, it was a branding thing, and these people were kind of talking friendly and, you know, what made them happy and why they started the company and stuff. And one of them actually said the line that we ended up using as their kind of tagline. And it's just letting people talk and you'll suddenly gain insights.
Okay.
So say when I was talking there about the market research, when you're talking to someone and you're validating your product idea, also let them hear about what kind of problems do they have? What are they struggling with? What don't they like about what they're doing? Or what do they like?
Open questions.
Open questions. Right. Gather all that data and you'll start finding other links. So if people are looking at starting the entrepreneurial process, it should be because they want to do the journey and do the business and everything. But just save themselves time and validate it first.
So that's really interesting, just to highlight that for people, is like, don't publish it online because then it's actually out in the public domain, like you were saying.
Yeah, with product stuff, yeah.
Okay. So if they do all the research and come to you, then they're like, yeah, we've chatted to XYZ. What's the next step then with you?
So then the step with us in particular, they'll come in and have a meeting and we will hear kind of what their goals are and what their budget is. Because if you want to make a tumble dryer, that is a multi-million euro project. You know, that is, it's a hefty bit of not only engineering, but manufacturing. And it's your tooling costs and your manufacturing, that's the big setback. So we set expectations in that way. And we also help them come up with a strategy. So they might have, say, 5,000, 10,000 put together for this tumble dryer project. It's going to be millions. Well, if it's a good idea, we can help them kind of develop the technology a little bit. Maybe we might be able to get them a prototype, some CAD, some renders, product research. And then they can take that package and go off and get their big investment. And then with that big investment, start going down the route.
Gotcha.
Alternatively, some people have an idea that's, you know, a small little gadget, a little consumer good, an electronic device that's extremely feasible on a smaller budget. And every project's different to some degree, but it's all about research, making sure you're solving the right problem, and then design, iteration, rapid prototyping. That's basically our process. We do a huge amount of prototyping and fabrication.
So you'll actually build the products?
Yeah, absolutely.
To a prototype stage?
Yeah, so we have really good workshop facilities. We've got 3D printers, mills, lathes, all that kind of thing. And we love getting I were like, we're nerds.
Okay. It's not being nerds. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. So we love making things, turning it on, figuring out if it works. And I think something about us as well, because it's a bit of a passion, you know, our job's not really 9 to 5. We'll be thinking about it in the evenings. Yeah. And you wake up first thing in the morning, you go, you know what could work?
That's so cool. I think it's cool also for people to realize that this stuff's happening in Ireland as well. When we saw your workshop, like, it's so cool just here in Dunleary to be able to like walk around and go, oh, it's actually someone making something here.
Yeah.
Physical, real, tangible stuff that you can touch. Dublin has a great like tech scene, doing air quotes there, because it's podcasts so people can understand. But like a lot of that's very intangible. You know, a lot of it is just bytes flying around, you know, ads been spent, you know, and it's very rare to hear of companies building something here in Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, like, everything's kind of software based and a lot of the investment software based, but what Ireland kind of has, and it's kind of hidden around the place, is a lot of engineering firms. And there's loads of engineering firms, be it like particularly in the farming sector, and you know, there's tractor hitches, milking stations, all these kind of things being built. There's loads and loads of brilliant engineering firms out who probably haven't been product focused, but they are ideal candidates to suddenly crack in, use their expertise and come up with products.
They know the problem.
So this is something we're kind of hoping to bridge in Ireland, is we're trying to bring design to engineering firms who maybe haven't given it enough, maybe gravitas before. So what we will help do is we'll help research problems as well. Like, we've dealt with companies before who haven't had a product idea. They say, we want to release a product, we're interested in this space. We'll go off, we'll do a couple of months research. We'll say, we've identified these as problems and potential product ideas. And then if they like them, we'll go off and basically build a prototype.
So they will literally come to you with nothing more than a rough idea of the space they want to work in?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And basically what that is that's people hiring out the design thinking process. So like, there's loads of companies that would do design thinking process, like Accenture would be one of the big ones, IDEO, some of the founders of it. And that is literally, people might come with a problem that they want solved, or they might come with a totally blank canvas and say, we want to get into this sector, can you find a problem and solve it for us?
It's pretty broad.
It's really, really broad. But that's where some of the most exciting stuff can come from.
I guess you've got a blank canvas to just explore.
Absolutely. And to be honest, it's where some of the best ideas come from. If an idea, a lot of people, an idea will pop into their head. And the problem with that is that's a good idea in your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas if you do the design thinking process, you're going out and you're researching the market. And then based on research, you have a good idea.
Mm. Explain just briefly the design thinking process for an entrepreneur. So someone's an entrepreneur and they're like, oh, that sounds good, I'm big in a sport. How can they then use that to find an idea?
Okay. So again, this doesn't have to be with the physical product. This can be with the service, and it's actually a problem solving technique as well. But what the design thinking process is, in a nutshell, is basically researching, rapid prototyping, and validating. So say you're into sports and you've decided you want to start a sports business. What you'd go off to do is you might pick the sport that you're into, and you might research, what are some problems people are having them? And you can research your research as well. Like, you can brainstorm topics that you want to study. So say you want to start a sports business. Well, you might make a list of things to do. You might want to research, say, sports injuries. You might want to research kind of sports training. Say you might want to research fun sports activities, things for kids. You know, you come up with a list of things and then you research all of these areas. You also might look at products that are existing on the market, and you research problems with them or what people don't like. Like, even a very valid way of researching a product is going on Amazon and looking at reviews. And if you see a reoccurring problem, like people hate this, does that, or something, you can go, well, if I solve that with my product, that might be an idea. But anyway, sorry, back to the...
No, that's great. Yeah, because I love giving people who listen practical roadmaps and tips and strategies they can use. This is brilliant. Go ahead.
So back to the design thinking process is, you go off and you research, and then after that you analyze your research and you say, okay, well, these are a couple of problems that we might be able to solve, and then you ideate. So you come up with your ideas, and then you might have a handful of ideas, and then you validate them. So you might build a small prototype, or it can be a sketch on a page, or it can be anything. And we do this thing called rapid prototyping. So the prototype doesn't even have to work. You know, it could be a cardboard model of it. It could be paper mache. And what you then do is you validate it. So you bring it back to the people who you might have talked to in the first place.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And you said, would you find this useful? Would you buy this? How much would you pay for it? All that kind of thing. And you do that in a cycle over and over, that iterative process, research, validate, until you end up with something you like. And then from there, that's where you run and develop it.
Okay, it's something very beautiful about seeing something physically in your hands after, you know, having that idea. I think especially make something real to someone as well.
Yeah, and it, like, I think people have a notion of something nice and shiny in their hands that they want to present to people. People are afraid of showing something rough.
Yeah.
And they'll, you know, not want to show something to people until it's highly polished. But it is a colossal waste of time spending a year making something highly polished, showing it to someone and being told you should do this change and this.
That needs to be the way around.
Instead, do something really rough. Start with the sketch and then come back with something made of card and then maybe something 3D printed, and then, you know, and you keep it's iterating and slow improvements the entire process.
That's brilliant to hear though, because I think some people, most people, are just scared of the ugliness. They're scared of, again, it comes back to what we talked about earlier in terms of hearing no. Like, they're also just scared of hearing, oh, that's not good. Or,
oh no. And like, no needs to be almost rephrased. It's not the no, it's every no is kind of a small refinement.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's a no and you're shut down and that's terrible. It's no, this is the new direction, or this is how we're shaving a bit off the side of this. And I should also point out, this, at the moment I'm talking very much physical products, but this whole process should be done as well with kind of user interaction and user design. So if someone has a software idea, they should do this both to kind of validate that their idea is good, but then also when they're developing, say, the interface of it, you go with a hand sketch of, this is the interface of my website. And then you go back with maybe a Photoshop version. You're like, this is it.
Yeah.
And you go through the navigation steps that way.
Because there's so many tools now as well online, like free tools and free design tools and free prototyping, that this no code movement as well, about people being able to design websites with absolutely zero code, just literally drag and drop.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So then they come to you and then you just put a shape on it and then...
Yeah, and so we get involved with people, as I said, they might not have an idea or they have an idea but they don't know how it works sometimes. And permitting, there's enough budget that we can present something that they'll either be able to go off and raise more finance with or actually bring to market. You know, we'll come up with a strategy and a plan for them and with them. And then, it's case by case. So sometimes we'll bring stuff right through to kind of the manufacturer-ready stage. And I've actually been out in China twice at different factories and stuff.
Okay.
Helping source suppliers, so all that kind of thing.
That's pretty cool. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, actually a documentary I'd really recommend that's out on Netflix at the moment. Have you seen American Factory?
No.
It's really brilliant.
That's tonight, sort of. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Because it's, you know, it's becoming a globalist world, and I think people need to be very, very ethical and mindful of the products they buy and how they're manufactured and how they're sourced. Everyone doesn't have time, obviously, to look into how their product's manufactured, but as a product design consultancy, I think it's up to us and our clients to make sure that together we're making an informed decision of where it's getting manufactured. So it's great to push stuff in Ireland. A lot of stuff we do, we'd always kind of, well, we do a process called design for manufacturing, design for assembly, and hopefully we can make stuff in Ireland at, you know, a cost price or within Europe. And then we, if we go to China as well, you know, sometimes you have to go somewhere like that. It's just more cost effective. So you actually fly out, and it's all about quality control. So you want to make sure the people you're teaming up with, that their factory is high standards, that the people there are happy, that products they're making are, you know, well made, that it's clean, that it's not chaos, all that kind of thing, and they're capable of making your actual product.
How did you find them? How did you initially start off? Obviously, you have a background in this, but for someone else who doesn't, how would they go about finding it?
So there's a bunch of different ways. I mean, the traditional way people used to do it before kind of the internet was you'd go to the embassy, and the embassy in China, they'd suggest some places, and, you know,
that is old school.
Yeah, that's literally how it used to get done. But now, I mean, like LinkedIn, there's loads of people. Every day we'll get loads of submissions of people asking, can they do prototyping or any tooling services for us?
Okay.
So what we might do is we'd research a bunch of companies. We will possibly put in for a quote. Yeah, again, need to be careful, and I'm not saying just with China, I'm saying everywhere, you be careful with what you're sending out drawings wise.
Okay.
Some companies, what they do if they're making a product and they want to be really secretive about it, is they'll manufacture a part of it in one factory, manufacture a part in a different factory, and then assemble it in a third factory.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's just another way to stop your product from being copied. But yeah, I mean, you find things through the internet, and then you might pick a few, do your research on them, see if they have other clients, a good list. And then it's all about getting there in person and actually validating it's
what was it like, the trip?
It was great. I mean, personally, I love China and Asia. I did 6 or 7 months exchange in Hong Kong University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I traveled around China a bit before. And yeah, it's just an amazing place. Like, it's a great culture. It's really, I don't know what the word is, like, extremely hardworking. That's this documentary I've recommended, American Factory, it'll really come true in that.
Okay.
Because what the documentary is about is this GM factory that's out of business, and a Chinese company moves into it. And it's the culture clash between this Chinese factory with Chinese employees, but also American employees in there.
Okay.
And it's not saying one or the other is better.
It's just the contrast.
It's strictly the contrast. So yeah,
it's very topical at the minute as well. That's
with the trade wars going on.
Yeah, it's bananas.
So it's fascinating, and like, it's a global world now, and you need to be mindful of that and other cultures. And you kind of, at the end of the day, it's all about hopping on a plane and doing stuff in person. Mm. As we were saying, it's like you do your market validation in person.
Yeah.
You do everything. You fly out there, you take a look at the factory, you meet the people, you make sure you're happy with it. And then also your first production runs, you'll fly out again, you'll check the product before it's even put on a boat.
Okay.
And yeah.
What sort of timescales are you talking about? Say, let's say you've got your prototype done, you're at the stage now where you're trying to get into manufacture, so you fly out. So what kind of time frames would be a turnaround? I suppose it varies in the product.
Exactly, yeah. I am. So what we do, at the moment, we run a pretty, because we're still a young enough company, we're only in business about 10, 11 months, but then behind that, we have loads of freelance and other skills behind us. So we actually have a whole team of kind of freelancers and collaborators we use. So we have some brilliant people. Mm. We got like these great illustrators, we've done these amazing book projects. We've got this guy who also worked in Dyson, but he also worked in Weta Workshop. So he was one of the model makers and all the Lord of the Rings stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then we've got some great people who do PCB and just other product designers and stuff. So we've got a team of collaborators that if it's a really big project, we can bring in overnight and put a lot of manpower behind it.
Yeah.
Versus if it's something small, we can do. So to be honest, everything's a bit budget dependent. Mm. It's you know, it's that whole, if you can either pay a lot and get it done fast and high quality, or you can pay not a lot and get it done bad quality and fast, or, you know, there's many ways of working it. But us as a company, we're very, very transparent and open, and we'll say, for this much budget, you can get this much done to this standard, and we set expectations and we set timelines. So as you said, it totally varies project to project.
So what kind of, I know you're quite young yet, but what, you're looking towards med tech, is it, that's where you're kind of looking to grow the company?
Yeah, well,
in the long term.
In the long term. So, I mean, med tech in terms of Ireland, it's where probably the most amount of work is. But that said, we'd like to make a bit of an impact and a dent in terms of maybe, I know stuff's not going to get manufactured here as much. You know, it is all kind of going off towards Asia and South America and stuff, kind of Eastern Europe. But we would like to maybe bring a bit more kind of hardware consciousness to Ireland. So at the moment, there's loads and loads of software companies, but that doesn't mean you can't have hardware product development companies here. People come up with new technology, and like, the colleges here are producing phenomenal engineers, and people here have brilliant ideas, and people here have an unbelievable get up and go. Like, we're master networkers, you know? So we've got a great nation of highly educated people that can make these great things. So we want to kind of put that at the forefront a little bit more and try get more consumer goods, not necessarily manufactured here, but designed. It's kind of, you know, Apple designed in California, but manufactured in China. We would like to see a lot more of that here in Ireland. So we'd like a lot more hardware to be made. But then at the end of the day, our company as well, while we're trying to make that impact and were very startup friendly and trying to encourage more and more people to start developing their own hardware and starting their own business. Some of the big ticket items would definitely be medtech here. And there's a lot of medtech here. So that is also an area that we focus on. So as mentioned to you earlier, like I have the background in medical device design. So there's a lot of studies going on in that. This whole area of human factors. So before, you know, people would make a product that functions or a medical device that functions. But now people are really focusing on, well, how does someone interact with it and the human factors behind it. So that's another area we're looking into at the moment.
So what have been the biggest challenges in the first year that you faced?
It's a good question. I mean, I guess... how many do you want? How much time do you have? One thing is, for us as a prototyping facility, in a very tight space, we've have to be very, very clever. And we're really bootstrapping the whole thing. So we have built one of the most kind of modular workshops probably anyone could ever find. But now actually we're moving to a bigger premises, so we've kind of solved that problem. But it's about kind of sustainable growing. And for us particularly as a consultancy, you know, there's a bit of peace of mind. You don't know when the next client's going to appear. And that's kind of been one of the biggest challenges. But like anything, all it takes is a bit of research and strategy and time put behind it. So now we have really kind of a clear path for finding new clients. It seems to be working. And so that's it really. It's the stepping back and kind of not panicking yourself. I think that's easy to do with a startup. It's on a young business.
Oh, yeah.
Every few months you'll be like, what the hell am I doing? What you need to do is you calm down, you step back and say, well, what's the problem? How can I research it and how can I solve it? Everything's solvable, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. Your mindset of that, you know, from the design, it just becomes so handy, I think, as an entrepreneur, because you face so many of the same challenges.
Oh, yeah. Product designer particularly is a real jack of all trades. So the DIT course, which again, I couldn't recommend more. It's brilliant. When I did it, you don't just learn manufacturing, tooling and materials. You do that, but you also do economics and you do macro and microeconomics. Mm-hmm. You also do marketing courses. You learn how to do focus studies, focus groups, data analysts. You do so much. You basically learn how to be an entrepreneur on the course, to be quite frank. So with that in mind, then you learn how to take a design mindset and how to really kind of craft your day-to-day, essentially. And it's the easiest way to stop yourself from kind of anxiety and panic is stepping back and saying, you know what, I could put a bit of thought into this and I could figure out, not being a headless chicken, what is a clever way of doing this.
I think you can answer my next question. How do you balance, because in the early few years, it's very difficult to balance your personal life and your professional life.
Yeah.
I know you kind of answered it earlier in a couple of different ways in terms of they tend to blend into each other, I think, for you guys. But how do you step back at the end of the evening? So we finish here now. It's like 10 to 7. We finish here in a few minutes. How do you like step away and turn off?
It's a good question. I mean, to some degree, it depends on what the job's on. A lot of the time you can't. So you will go home and you'll be thinking, you know what, that might work. And sometimes it's pure excitement. It's more like, I can't wait to turn that on tomorrow and see if it works, or for a print to be finished or something. So like in that sense, I'm unbelievably lucky with the job. I'm excited to go in every day. But to actually turn off, to be honest, it's having a group of friends, kind of a close-knit group, and you can meet up. And like, I have a lot of product design friends and it's great when we meet up. It's talking shop and it's talking about all that kind of thing. But then I have friends who honestly couldn't care what I'm doing.
You need that.
And I think it's great. I think
that's great. Good man. Anyway.
Exactly. You can't be like, well, this narcissistic, this is what I'm doing. So it's really nice having kind of that. So for me, it's kind of the friends and family is kind of my shut off.
Totally. So how can people learn a little bit more about you guys?
Yeah, so if they go on to teamhuman.ie, our website there, you can go through basically all of our services. The other thing is then joining our Instagram. Also, we kind of put up photos of the different projects we're working on.
I started following you today. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks very much. And I mean, if anyone has any questions or is looking at making the leap, definitely get in contact.
So we'll save you like getting hundreds of crazy phone calls. What do you like to hear when someone rings you up? Not like, I want to build a wind turbine on Mars.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
is
yeah.
your, you know, what should people have thought about before picking up the phone to you?
Okay, well, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're a business, so people will need a budget. And like a lot of people will come to us and they'll say they know there's grants in the local enterprise office and stuff like that. And that is true.
Grants don't pay the rent for me when you're coming to me the first day.
Exactly. So yeah, you know, take a look, do as much research as you can yourself. Do your market validation yourself, investigate the local enterprise offices, do as much as you can up front and come to us when you know you have a little bit of a budget to spend. And then we will assess kind of your budget and we'll assess exactly what you're trying to get done. And we'll either say if it's totally unrealistic with that budget and give you an idea of how you could go about it, or we'll say, okay, look, for that amount, here's the stage we can get you to, or, you know, fingers crossed, we can get you the full way.
Mm.
So, I mean, as I said, you know, we're big believers in the whole kind of team human. It's about humans. We're really transparent, startup friendly.
Yeah.
We want to see people succeed. So yeah, that's basically it. Get in contact.
Put a bit of thought about it, have a little bit of budget. Where can people actually go? So the Leos, you recommend going to the Leos first?
Yeah, so like local enterprise offices is great. Especially if someone has absolutely no budget, but they have a limited company, you can get a thing called an innovation grant. That's $5,000. You need to pay the VAT on it. And you can spend that with the university. So that's great for kind of your first kind of dipping your toe in the water.
Gotcha.
But there's positives and negatives to that, obviously. You're working with the university, so you're kind of on their time scale to a degree. You're not, you know, you're not business to business. There's certain hours you can call. But if people are just starting out, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you go in your own pace. Talking to your local enterprise board, Enterprise Ireland as well, there's a bunch of courses. Like the New Frontiers course is great. So phase one, they kind of make you think a little bit more about your product development, product validation, all that kind of thing. And then from that, it's all about talking to people. It's networking. It's getting out there. It's you know, word of mouth. You might talk to someone, you don't know what's going to come from it, but then they'll put you in contact with someone else. So it's the personal interaction.
That's great advice for anything. That's great advice for any kind of stage of your business. Like I was actually introing two people yesterday and like I loved the guy's attitude. One guy's an entrepreneur and he's like, yeah, you never know what might come of any chat over a coffee. I was like, exactly. You know, he always has that mindset of like, yeah, you never know what might come of a chat.
Yeah, and I mean like, me personally, I have awful social anxiety. So you just have to push yourself and do it. And it's one of the things, once you're sitting down with someone, you realize, you know, what was that in my head?
Every time I start to do one of these, every time I'm on the way to do a podcast, I'm like, oh my God, this could be daunting now. It's just the unknown.
Yeah.
But every single time, it's a lovely experience. Like sitting down and chatting with yourself, you meet new people and you just, your brain gets fired up. Like it's just, pushing yourself past that initial couple of minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And then it can lead you anywhere, you know?
The last thing is, every week we give away a book.
Mm-hmm.
So we ask people who, for a recommendation of a book that's kind of made an impact on them either personally or professionally. So is there anything that kind of stands out to you?
Any of the kind of Tim Brown books. He's the guy who I mentioned, IDEO, who does all these design thinking ones. He's got a bunch of great design thinking ones. But actually a great one I read recently called Bad Science by Ben Goldsmith.
Oh, I've heard of it. It's good?
Yeah, it's great. And one of the nice things about it is it's kind of important to have a little bit of cynicism.
Okay, yeah.
And basically he goes through all of these different kind of medical claims and scientific claims and how people are manipulating studies and stuff like this. And it's a nice kind of eye-opener to how industries can operate and kind of what kind of a playing field you might be getting in. So it's not necessarily directly business development, but it is to do with science, scientific studies, placebo effects. It's fascinating.
I heard someone talk about this, actually, ironically, on the podcast about 2 weeks ago. So I'm actually going to get it for myself, but we'll also give one away. So all someone has to do to win it is tag yourselves at Team Human Design. Is it at Team Human Design?
Yeah.
And tag myself, Mr. Gary Fox, on any of the socials. So Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever it is. Just make sure to tag both of us and there'll be a chance of winning. Sean, thank you so much.
Well, thanks very much.
I hope you enjoyed episode 31 with Sean Toomey from Team Human. As I always say, please, if you have enjoyed it, do share the episode on social media, as it matters a huge amount to me and also to the guests. So they've been kind enough to give me their time, so I'd like to give them a little bit back in terms of getting their message out to as many people as possible. So if you are enjoying the pod, please do share it with people on social media, or even just send the link to people, as it matters a huge amount. Thank you so much for listening. If you do want to win the book that Sean mentioned, simply share the episode on social media, whatever one, it doesn't really matter, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. Just make sure to tag me, Mr. Gary Fox, and Team Human. I will see you next week for episode 32. Talk to you then.